With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
All right, guys, we've got a fun show for you today. Our friend Alistair Weaver is in the studio. We're going to talk a little bit about the Tesla Cybertruck, and Goldberg's going to tell us about going to Saudi Arabia for this inaugural car event, sort of a SEMA type show and car auction and lots of stuff to get into. Before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. You're dropping off your dry cleaning, maybe pick up some milk. Now you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that list. You don't have to drop off or pick up anything. Just go to geico.com and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. Go to geico.com. And of course, our friends at Dodge. You don't have to wait until Black Friday to get a great deal. You can hurry into the Dodge Black Friday sales event today, where it's easier than ever to get a new Dodge Durango, because we've got Employee Plus pricing all month long. No matter where the season takes you, the Dodge Durango is here to make every trip this season a breeze. Because you're behind the wheel of a Dodge Durango. You're behind the wheel of a performance-driven SUV. And whether you're rolling out with friends or family, you'll be able to fit everyone with the Durango's 7-passenger seating capacity. So no more waiting in line and no more camping out, because Employee Plus pricing is here. It's in November all month long. Hurry into your Dodge Black Friday sales event today. All right, let's get started. Welcome to CarCast. I am Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea. We're in the studio with our buddy Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com. How are you, Alistair?
I'm good. Thanks, Matt. Good.
And Bill Goldberg calling in from his new pad in Texas. Oh, man, it's been an exciting week. We toured the LA Auto Show, and that was kind of fun. And then Tesla did a thing.
That's what you could call it. Yeah.
And Goldberg went to Saudi Arabia for what seemed like a cool event on social media, but might not be as cool as you would have thought. But lots to talk about today. Let's go ahead and get started. Bill, buddy, how is your trip to Saudi Arabia?
Let's just say that all in all, it was a hell of a long journey.
Yeah.
Once you take each facet of it, whether it be the 16-hour flight plus the 2-hour flight plus the other 2-hour flight, or the overall tone of it, man, it was what you have to understand is it was the inaugural event. It was the first time that anything like this had happened over there, and you grab a cornucopia of people from the car world. And, 400 cars on display and God knows how many performing, it has the ability to maybe go awry in one area or two. And I'm trying to calm it down a little bit. But, all in all, it was a great experience, but it's truly something that needs to be massaged a bit. The culture is so much different. It's like landing on Mars and trying to do, an automobile auction.
Yeah. Back up a little bit and just tell us what the event was, because it's a little confusing. Everybody who follows the car world on social media just sees like you and everybody from Discovery Channel and History and all this stuff. Everybody's there, but nobody knew why everyone was there. It's sort of a SEMA show and a big cars and coffee and an auction. It was sort of like SEMA week meets Monterey Car Week, you know, at one big sort of curated event, right?
In the yeah, throw it in a blender and take one part SEMA, you know, one part Power Tour, one part Cars and Coffee. You throw a whole lot of celebrities, a whole lot of bitchin' rides, whether it be exotics or whether it be, you know, American Muscle, drag cars, any kind of race car you're ever going to imagine, you know, from the teens to current day cars. I brought my Demon over there, and, it's literally like unloading that package in the middle of the desert and trying to educate people, on the fly. And it was really tough. Like I said, this podcast didn't long enough for me to kind of debrief it, but all in all, it was a terrific experience. You know, we were part of the inaugural event. You have to set your you have to be realistic with your expectations. I think mine were a little high. I think everybody's were a little high, but
it was so, you know, it was hyped
once you
up.
Once you understand
us.
The dynamics of it,
yeah,
it's a completely different culture, period. You know, and you really don't have to go any further than that. I got to say, the people were absolutely wonderful. They were so accommodating, but they didn't know exactly each step along the way. You know, the cars were stationed, you know, in a dirt parking lot right outside the auction where you're having to drive across the block. And, you know, there were $100,000 cars to $10 million cars going across the block. And you've got, you know, things that, you know, i.e. Kendig's cars, you know, that he spent, you know, God knows how long to fabricate these beautiful pieces of machinery. And they're filthy going into the tent. It's just, you know, each aspect of it was a struggle. But all in all, I think it's an event that, you know, the next time they're definitely going to learn from their mistakes. You can't really assume that it's going to go off without a hitch. I mean, we all, like I said, we all had very high expectations. You know, cars were late being delivered. You know, it's hard to point the finger in, you know, at one entity when, you know, it's a group effort of, you know, transport. You know, you got to wait on customs to come by. Well, customs came by at their normal time, probably 2 o'clock every afternoon. And, you know, you've got guys waiting on $1 million vehicles to come out of the pods. And all in all, it just was a bit of a cluster. So I think they're going to learn from their mistakes. And any time that this event is put on in the future, it's going to learn from that. And hopefully it'll be a much more pleasurable experience. But like I said, the things that you would assume are going to be, you know, sketchy, were not. The travel was spectacular. The accommodations were unbelievable. The people were just, I mean, I was brought to tears by a couple of these kids that were brought through the line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, their passion, you know, for the celebrities, for the vehicles, it's there. It's just, it's blending cultures. It's, you know, not having security around your vehicle and having people gawk over them and unfortunately scratch them from time to time. So, I mean, it has great potential. Let's just put it that way.
Would you do year two, or do you wait for year three or four to go back?
Well, it depends on how year two is set up. It's completely dependent upon who's involved. It's completely dependent upon, you know, rectifying the issues that were at hand. I'm not going to say I'm going to bail on it, but I'm surely not going to want to go next week. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Because I know Saudi Arabia is putting a lot of money into sports events, like the next Anthony Joshua and Andy Ruiz fights also in Saudi Arabia. How do you see all that?
And
shaking?
What isn't? You know, everything, like you said. Go ahead, Alistair. I'm sorry.
No. So, Bill, I was just saying that, you know, they're investing so much in these massive signature events. You know, it's interesting times.
Sort of American events, like they want,
well,
like,
yeah,
these car
and
shows,
and you know, the Anthony Joshua Ruiz fight, that's not a cheap bit of entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, taking what our event and taking it over there, it's not a cheap bit of entertainment. Put it this way, they have very tight restrictions on vehicles. Okay,
yeah,
and the general public maybe did not know that the restrictions were lifted for every vehicle that was sold during that auction. So yeah. If you bought Pedregon's, 8,000 horsepower, funny car, then you could have driven it home.
Yeah, that's right. I saw the sign, whoever put it up, the royal family, prince or whatever, who sort of quarterbacked this whole event, just they had a big sign that says anything you sell at auction is granted street legal indefinitely. I don't care what it is, as sort of a way to incentivize people, which is interesting. But it's good to hear about the good things that happened. The people seem to have a good time. You guys were taken care of fairly well, which is good. But the things that they aren't used to, look, people travel and stay in hotels and do that stuff all the time. But putting on an event like this is new. So their event planners probably have no concept of how to do an event like this. And our event planners and organizers out here in this country don't know how to work with that country, don't know what their rules are, don't know what to ask for, don't know what the lead time is on stuff.
Yeah, but I got to interrupt you, Matt. Yeah. Here's the deal. You always have to have contingency plans, and you always have to plan for the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't really know that any blame can be put on, the other side, because if you're planning for the worst and you have contingency plans, then you're prepared. I've got to just say, and I don't point fingers, but worldwide, left a lot to be desired, to say the least.
Oh, the auction house. Yeah.
Yeah. The lack of communication was appalling. So, that's the only negative I can say. You have a lot of factors that are wonderful pieces of the puzzle, but if you don't have the glue that holds it together,
yeah,
then you're done. The thing's going to implode. It's just a matter of time. Now, well, I'm not going to say that the event imploded by any stretch of the imagination, but from the bridges, the bridges that were supposed to have been built were destroyed before, we could even walk across them.
Right. Yeah.
So it was a struggle. It's worth the struggle. It's the inaugural event. You look at the docket of what's going to happen in Saudi Arabia, and they are not holding back. They're trying to open up the floodgates and bring westernized culture over there.
Yeah,
And you have to applaud that. But there's going to be hiccups and there's going to be bumps, along the way. And it's unfortunate that, mine was exacerbated by my situation in that I just moved into a house. I've been on the road for 6 weeks. My stuff's still in boxes, and then I board a plane and go 17, 18 hours to Saudi Arabia and stay there for 5-6 days. And, you just wish it would have been a little smoother. That's all.
Yeah.
Sometimes these things are good in hindsight, though, just for the sheer experience. I used to run events in a previous life, and I know how stressful it is to put those things
sure.
Up.
Like, they're hectic for sure. And maybe don't start so big from the first one. Maybe it's okay to go small and then grow a little bit bigger. I the whole vendor booth section, we had friends over there, Centerforce Clutches and Roush and Classic Recreations. I saw them all standing around in a booth with nothing in it. So,
well, that was part of the puzzle too. The auction started on Friday at 5:30, and I got my car Friday. It started Saturday at 5:30, and I got my car Saturday morning. And I had already been there for 3 days with an empty booth, and it's just you're kind of caught with your thing and your thing. There were a lot of people that took a lot of merchandise, and I was one of them.
Yeah.
And the payment process, right? You want things to be smooth, especially in this day and age, everywhere you are, especially at the inaugural event, and you want to put on the best performance possible, and first impressions are everything. And, if you have customers, fans coming up to your booth, and they want a piece of merchandise, and you have to give them a ticket for it, and they have to take the ticket and go pay and then come back to you and with the receipt and then get the item. It's a painful process. So I ended up giving away every single piece of my merchandise.
You didn't want to haul it back home. I'll tell you, you mentioned the auction.
Well, unfortunately, I got a car to bring back home, so I could have put it back in the car.
Oh, that's right.
That's not the impression that you want to leave. You know?
Yeah. Okay,
I wanted to touch a different group of people. And, you know, I don't know, 70% of the people that went through my line were kids. And, you know, I'm not going to, they should not suffer throughout the process, no matter how painful it is. So I gave away all my stuff, and I did it with a smile on my face. You know, a lot of people in that situation can't do that because that's their bread and butter. I'm very fortunate that, you know, the car business is a passion of mine. And it only, you know, represents a portion of what I do. So, you know, the people who make their living on it, you know, I feel much worse for them.
You know, you talked about the auction. There was something like 120 cars listed on the worldwide auction. I'm looking at the Hammer Price app, which lists all the cars. And I think four sold. I don't even know how the four sold. There was nobody there in the room, I guess, that was bidding. And here's the thing.
There were like 15 people in the crowd when my car went across, and one of them was Rawlings. You know, and his buddies, yeah. And so there wasn't money.
Yeah, you had cars there. Richard Rawlings had cars there. Ken Digg, a bunch of people had cars there. But the thing that always confuses me is that I'm just going to tell you guys this. So when you go to an auction, when you go to any of the high end auctions, Monterey, you know, Amelia Island, if there are no bids on your vehicle, the auctioneer can simulate bids. If you're you're selling a car for $500,000, your reserve price is $500,000, your estimate is 5 to 7, and there's not a single bid. Now, the auction house cannot bid against anybody. You can't artificially drive up the bid, but they don't want to ruin the value of your car. So if there's not a single bid, the auctioneer will go, $100,000, $200,000, $400,000, and get you close to the estimated price, and then close the bidding. It's all fiction. And I'm looking at this list of cars, and I'm like, this all has to be fiction because nobody was bidding, but the fictional prices are batshit crazy. There's a 1981 BMW M1. Cool car.
Yeah, very cool car.
Not an M1 Pro car, by the way.
Million dollars
with a high bid, no sale. That's a crazy number to begin with. Like, if you're going to lie about the number, come with something reasonable. But I get they don't want to like ruin the value of that guy's car. But it's not even an M1 Pro car. It doesn't have any real history to it. Like, I don't know. I don't know where these came from.
I was sitting there when that car went across.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
You know, we were saying before it came on air, but I was at a Tesla event last week. It seemed to me that I was coming in saying I was at the craziest event, but it sounds not.
It sounds like.
Yeah.
Oh my God. All right. So
can we please segue to the Tesla?
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about Tesla. First, I'm going to tell you guys about Zorro, our friends on Zorro. If you guys purchase supplies for a business, you know that it's nearly impossible to find everything you need in one place. That's why there's Zorro.com, where their number one goal is to make your life easier. It's Zorro, Zorro.com. It's where you'll find everything you need for businesses of almost any size and almost any industry. Zorro.com has tools and equipment, safety and office supplies, cleaning supplies, and more. And Zorro has tons of stuff for industries like electrical, plumbing, contracting, manufacturing, pretty much anything you can think of. And you'll find brands that you know and trust, like Stanley, 3M, Milwaukee, Schneider, and Rubbermaid, just to name a few. Zorro.com offers amazing customer service for all people anywhere, pretty much here all over the U.S. Right now, you'll enjoy fast, free shipping on orders of $50 or more. And if you don't have a business to shop for, you can still find lots of great items at Zorro.com. Here's the deal. Go to Zorro.com/carcast, sign up for their Zmail newsletter, and get 15% off your first order. Just go to Zorro.com/carcast for 15% off. All right, so
I got to interject,
yes,
and I'm
sir.
Sorry. I got to put a positive button on the end of that. If we don't mention the event again,
yeah,
there's a grandfather guy who you and I know, and I call him grandfather because, man, he's been around the business so long. But if it was not for him, I would have, my head would have exploded, and I wouldn't have been able to leave Saudi without, you know, feeling comfortable about my vehicle being loaded back on. But Richard Waitis,
oh yeah,
did an unbelievable job at trying to, you know, piece this thing together for, you know, his friends, i.e. the entire car community. So I would be remiss in moving on if I didn't, you know, really give him a pat on the back, because, man, I love him, and he's invaluable. And you know what a guy he is, but he went above and beyond.
You know, Richard Waitis is our friend at Magnaflow Exhaust, and you know, his job there is you know, he puts together the whole SEMA show thing for them and does all the marketing stuff and does all the coordination with the TV buys and all that stuff. But you realize this guy's job, what makes him so good, is he knows how to handle relationships. He appreciates the relationships with people, and he's helped me immensely, worked on my cars and all sorts of things. And not just that, but when he comes up to LA, we grab a lunch, we grab a dinner, and he's such an advisor on the industry. He's a rock star, and I know he's quarterbacked some of your builds, and it's been just a fountain of information as well. So I agree with that. Richard Waitis is the best. And there's so many good people in the industry that we work with, but he's just one of those guys that goes above and beyond again and again. So love that guy. Good call on that one. Good shout out to Richard Waitis. All right. So, talking about shit shows.
You said it. I didn't. Thank you.
Big announcement from Tesla this week. our friend Alistair was there. I saw your live video, like you were like posting or on Twitter, and I couldn't tell if it was a joke. I don't know if you could tell if it was a joke. It's definitely not joking month, like, because it's not April 1st. But what the hell? What's going on? It's just all a ploy to get everybody to just do this, come into podcasts and write about stuff and post stuff? Or
yeah, I mean, he's great for website traffic, isn't he? It was, I tell you, when you were there, it was more... You got a very different perception from, because we had a lot of guys back at the office, and probably you guys were watching it on the live stream. And when you're there, you almost got like a different take on it. Because we turned up, and outside there was the Back to the Future DeLorean. Then when you went inside, there was Elon Musk's Bond car submarine Esprit that he bought an RM auction.
Yeah.
Which are all these kind of Giger et al. Design, 1970, that angular shape. So you're sort of setting the scene. And then you go in and you get all this fanfare, and Elon comes out. And I've been to a few of these before. So he started talking, and he set it up as, this is actually quite sensible. Look, this is the size of the truck market. This is a real opportunity. And you think, the investors are loving all this.
Yeah.
This is sensible talk. Then this thing, the door opens, this thing appears on the stage.
But doesn't look anything like this concept drawings of a long time ago that he did. Like, he had a truck drawing.
So it doesn't look like anything we've ever seen, apart from a hint at these sort of 1970s Giugiaro sort of angular shapes. So then you're like, well, also it didn't sort of make sense that he brought it out so early, because normally at these events he rambles on for an hour and a half and then the car appears, like at the Model Y. So you start going, okay, we're in SpaceX, this is coming too early, and, you know, this is a thing to talk about Mars or something like that. So anyway, the show goes on, and then they had that bit where they threw the metal ball bearing Franz, the designer who I know quite well, through the belt bearing, and it broke. And even then, when you're there, you're like going, oh, maybe that's just part of the gig.
Right. Okay. So if you missed that, he said it has shatterproof glass, and he invited one of his friends, co-workers, whatever,
Franz,
out.
The chief designer of Tesla.
With a metal ball, and he throws it at the glass. The glass shatters, and he's like, oh, that didn't go right. Try it again. And it shatters again on the back window.
But when you were there, when you were actually there, you weren't sure whether that was like that was like an in joke.
Yeah.
So, and I, at every moment, I expected something to happen. Like, I expected almost if it broke, then maybe it'd be like an Easter egg that shape would go, you know, would peel away.
Oh, yeah, that would have been funny.
So then this
just you expected Benny Hill to pop up.
Right, so, run around in circles.
So this goes on a bit. And then Elon said, got to the end. Oh, and one more thing. You're like, now the truck's
finally
coming.
Now I know the truck's finally coming.
And then from to my right, because I was basically by the door where all the vehicles came out of, this ATV appeared. And you're like, Okay. And then it sort of continued. The ATV came in, and then he walked off the stage. And even then, I think me and a bunch of other people were like, our eyes were following, because we're like, any moment from now, like, there's going to be a thing, something's going to happen, and we're going to reveal it. And nothing ever did. So even, I mean, that was a funny event.
So everyone was still like a little quiet going, I don't understand what's going on.
Everybody's kind of amused. And you, and the thing is, you sat there, or you stood there in my case, thinking, is that it? What's actually happening here? And then even the Teslarati, because there's very little media at these events. It's mainly just Tesla fanboys.
Yeah.
And fanboys, you know, it's very male-dominated. And you kind of was just, everybody was sort of looking at each other, and then they realized this was it, and this was what they were presenting. And then from then, the kind of evening went on, and I got to have a ride in it, which was...
How was that?
Well, when you get into it, it's the interior is almost like a Model 3 with a slightly bigger screen. And they had got this really cool little fascia effect, which apparently is made of paper, but looks like marble. And it's a 2x3-row truck. And, you know, it's got a big battery electric motor. They drove us down the road and they drove us back again. So it's difficult to work anything out of that. But the thing that really struck me is a truck for Tesla is a complete open door. You know, there's a huge market, well over 1 million vehicles a year. And you know, it just seemed such an obvious thing for them to do. And now they've come out with this stainless steel. I mean, you can't build it in that form that it's in.
It's stainless steel.
It's stainless steel.
Which is why he had his DeLorean parked out front.
Had his DeLorean. And one of the guys said to me from Tesla, oh, this could be our DeLorean moment. I was like, you don't know your history of DeLorean, mate, if you say that.
Yeah, right? Right?
Think that ended,
it was a good documentary. It was a good movie.
I think that DeLorean ended in movie. Disgrace and jail, as far as I remember.
Yeah.
So you're just left with this truck, which all our understanding of you can't really build because it won't meet crash, it won't meet this, it won't meet that. And even Elon's come out now and said, yeah, we don't really know how we're going to build it, but we'll get there.
But he took deposits on it.
Yeah, deposits of 100. I mean, interesting, in the past, the deposits have been like $1,000. Now it's $100.
$100. Okay, $100. So it doesn't seem like a lot, but he's getting deposits.
If you get a couple of $100,000 at $100, or what, 20 million. But 20, you know, it sounds like a lot of money to you and I. Maybe not Bill, but you and I at least. But in car terms, you know, in terms of what it costs to develop a vehicle, honestly, it's not a lot of money.
No, but he doesn't need it to pay for the truck. He needs it to pay for the other stuff he's still working on.
Oh,
so
it was a funny man. And you just, the Model Y was actually the first time Tesla has done what you would call a very sensible thing, which is to put an SUV body on a Model 3 chassis.
Yeah.
That's total common sense. This, you're just like, why don't you build something that looks like the Rivian or a F-150, but a bit cooler?
Yeah.
And you would sell hundreds of thousands of I don't get it.
It was a funny, there was another funny tweet that came out. Very, very, I don't have it in front of me, but it was very smart, very well written. And it was the ATV that he brought out for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Looked a lot like Yamaha's like ATV. I believe it's Yamaha's ATV. And they tweeted out a statement that said, we have no affiliation and no communication with Tesla. We have no involvement with that ATV. But it doesn't surprise us that it looks like one of ours because ours is the best-selling ATV in the world. And I was like, all right, well said. Good job.
That's the thing. Like Ford's now doing this challenge of F-150 because that little video of it pulling the F-150 was nonsense as well in that it was pulling it uphill and it was in rear-wheel drive. So the thing about Tesla is everybody clings to the coattails. I mean, I see it from the traffic to our site or the traffic to our social. We had one of our biggest social weeks ever last week, partly fed by the Mustang. We talk about that in a minute, but also fed by the Tesla stuff. Everybody laps it up. So it's difficult to know whether
it's kind of over the top and gimmicky just sort of feeds the machine. Actually, Bill, this is a question for you because you've had a long relationship with Vince McMahon, who runs WWE. And Vince McMahon will go down as one of the greatest marketers of all time. And like you can't discount a guy like him. When you look at guys like a Steve Jobs and a Vince McMahon, like they're in the same category. And Elon Musk is sort of the next generation of that. But does that strike a chord with you at all, Bill? Because Elon's a little bit like what a Steve Jobs or Vince McMahon was as they were putting things together in the heyday, right?
You know, somebody famously said publicity, whether good or bad, is publicity. Mm-hmm. I think this falls into that category. There's definitely a way that you can liken all of those people that you mentioned together, but they're different iterations of the same thing. It's a carnival atmosphere, and that's kind of what Elon has presented from the beginning. But this is a sideways move. I mean, I see where you can get the analogy for sure, because sometimes wrestling is as ridiculous as it comes. But at the end of the day, if you create a stir, whether it be good or bad, you're having people talk about your product.
The interesting thing is the share price tanked.
Yeah, the share price tanked.
But look at, I mean, you cannot predict anything that guy is doing, whether it's Vince, whether it's Elon. I don't know. I don't really understand that realm in that. There's no explanation as to what.
No. So this, by the way, this isn't. Elon Musk doing XFL or WWE Casino, two big failures, right? Like, this isn't that. The problem is Elon's gotten in trouble with stuff he's tweeted out. He's been fined by the SEC. So it's been out there already going, this guy's a little nuts. He's a little nuts, but he's a visionary and he's running a good company, arguably. But now he does a huge press conference about a product. This is all about Tesla. And now I think the shareholders are going, his crazy has gone beyond his Twitter rantings to something that's going to affect our bottom line. He can't actually make this thing and shouldn't because it's terrible.
hang on. I'm going to stop you there, Mike, because I looked at this thing. And you know what? I thought I'd like one of these. But I mean, I'm a little bit eccentric too. But I looked at this and I thought, I want one of these. I mean, part of it is there's a lot of rational thought that said, actually, this isn't a good business decision. It isn't this. It isn't that. But I love the fact that this stuff exists, not just because we can come and sit here and talk about
it. Sure, it's wacky, but we have a Pagani. So we have all kinds of crazy stuff out there. But as a shareholder, you're going to go, this is the competitor to the F-150? No, this is not.
Oh, as a shareholder, yeah. But as an enthusiast, I love
it. As an enthusiast, you're like, I want to drive it. I want to see what I'm going to do. The memes are crazy.
Also, as an enthusiast, it's good that you still have choices and that everything doesn't look alike. So, you know, because in the world of electrifying vehicles, you know, the Teslas, as far as I'm concerned, look like an old Taurus.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it doesn't have a lot of character to it. So to see that he's going all the way at the other end of the spectrum, I mean, I guess a piece of me does go, you know what, that's kind of cool that you can go that far sideways, you know, and break the mold, but I can't understand anything.
But I think the other thing is, what is the truck market in the U.S.? Yeah, I want one, but it's too big for me because I live in L.A., so it's not really going to work for me. You know, the truck market is generally a pretty conservative place in this country, with both a little C and a big C.
Look, but you just said it. You hit the nail on the head. You want one, you're not getting one, right?
Like, it's too big.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to get. You want one, but it doesn't. Like the new Defender's cool. I love the Range Rover, Land Rover Defender. The two door looks awesome. I love that idea. I'm not getting one. Right, I'm not getting one. It's cool. I want one.
I might get one of those.
I'm not getting one. You should get one.
I might get one of those.
You should get one of those because it's quirky and it fits, and it's British and it's two door and it fits the lifestyle. But look, for whatever reason, like I love the GT500, Shelby GT500. I probably won't get one. It's just not what I need in my life right now. I want one. And that's not as batshit crazy as the Tesla truck.
Ours has been built in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I know. Yours is on the way. That's why I don't need to get one. Just bring yours over here.
It was great. And obviously that last week started, or actually the week before, I went up to Detroit to look at the Mustang Mach. I'm getting so much
the
crap
Mustang.
I'm getting so Mach-E. Much crap on YouTube and elsewhere for calling it the Mach-E, because that's how I say Mac. Like, Concord and all the rest of it was Mac. Something.
How do you say McDonald's?
McDonald's.
Okay.
And apparently I'm supposed to say mock, as in like coffee.
Mock. Yeah.
Mock. Like, Mike, I'm mocking you.
Yes, that's how you're supposed to say it.
Okay, I'm getting so much crap on YouTube.
Well, no offense, but you should.
All right. I mean, what's with this bullshit, crazy accent you're making
up? We have to adjust and adapt and overcome. So, I mean, you got to be realistic about your audience right now if you count a match.
I got to be honest with you, because we know you.
Yeah, what's your opinion, Matt? I mean, you're a Mustang guy.
We know you. We love you. I saw your video, and the first time you said it, I giggled. A little bit I giggled.
There you go.
And then I just kept going with
what
it.
What I didn't get is Charlie, the cameraman, who is a full-time editor. He spent the whole day with me in Detroit. And at no point did Charlie ever say to me, mate, I think you're you're pronouncing it wrong.
Yeah, no, he's just like, I'm going to send this back into corporate. They're going to edit it. It's going to be hilarious. No, it was good. The video was good.
The video's been a huge success for us.
I love you guys got an inside look on it. Let's talk about it a little bit. You know, I came in and Bill and I did a show. Adam and I did a show because it's such a big deal. We got into a little bit like why call it a Mustang and this and that. But what's your perspective on it?
Well, I spent an hour on the phone, then subsequently another hour at LA Auto Show with a guy called Ted Canis, who's the head of Ford's EV. They call it Team Edison. And he was really candid about where they'd come from. Apparently, a couple of years ago, before the latest CEO took over, Jim Hackett, Ford's policy was basically to stick electric motor in any other SUV and just tick a box. Mm-hmm. And then when the new CEO came in, and a chap called Jim Farley came back from Europe, they looked at this and said, this is madness. You know, the world is turning electric. We need to be in the game. We need to be in the game now. And they realized that running this through the conventional Ford channels wouldn't work. So rather like they do with Ford Performance or like the GT program, they say, right, you're the team. Break the rules. Just get this thing done. You're in a separate office up the road because they're in Corktown and just get on with it. And this little team has put this thing together. And according to Ted, he was saying that they've done all this research around what people think of EVs. 40% of people still think you have to put gas in an EV, according to their research.
Okay.
And 80% think that they're slow and have limited range, maybe driven by like Priuses and Uber and that sort of thing. So they're like, okay, we've got to combat this. So, and what is, then the next part was, well, what is Ford known for? It's known for performance, trucks, and to a lesser extent, SUVs. So they said, okay, how can we leverage what we're known for? And also, it's a pretty chunky price point. So it's okay, let's call it a Mustang. Because at the very least, you think of Mustang and you think of it being sporting.
Yeah.
So you've got a perception. I know Mustang's a bit of a double-edged sword, that the image either works or doesn't work for you. So that was the thinking behind it. So we'll launch with a Mustang EV, and then we'll have an F-150 EV coming not a bit before too long, and almost present those like a premium brand. So we flew up to Detroit and had it in a studio well ahead of everybody else, and actually flew into a massive snowstorm, but we made it. And I like it. I know you're going to get a lot of stick, but I thought, actually, does this work as a thing? I think it looks good. It's a good size. It's the size of a Macan, but because it's an electric car, there's a lot more space inside. It's practical. The spec looks really good. It's going to be fast. It's going to have a good range. I just thought, I actually like this thing. And could I imagine myself buying one? Yeah. I wouldn't buy one. I would lease one. And that's actually an issue because Ford isn't offering a lease on this, which I think is they're protecting their margins by doing that. But I think that's a misstep because our advice is if you're buying electric, always lease it.
Okay. First off, I agree. I don't give a shit. I don't care if it's called a Mustang or not.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it for what it is. Is it a cool EV? And right now, it's kind of the first like real EV that I would consider because it actually has it's got some practicality to it. It's the right size, especially for LA. And it does have some performance characteristics that I like. And what I mean by that is, it's not performance characteristics that are new because it's an EV. It's performance characteristics that are tried and true, like MagnaRide. When you get the GT or GT Performance Pack, I love MagnaRide. I've driven it in several versions of their cars.
New Corvette as well.
Right? And I know how well it works. It's adjustability. It's different settings. And if you tell me, hey, man, I can get the suspension dynamics of a Corvette or the Mustang Bullitt or GT500 in an EV, I like that, right? Because it's familiar to me. And instead of just telling me numbers about like how fast it is or whatever, like, yeah, but I don't know what that really means in an EV, right? So I am interested in it. Now, I do want to ask you about leasing versus buying. Ford is not – you're saying lease an electric vehicle, and I want to hear why. And then if you can't lease an electric vehicle from the manufacturer like Ford, what's your feeling on like a third-party leasing company?
Well, the big thing here is – so this is getting quite complicated. So bear with me. OEM manufacturers had something called a federal grant for $7,500. So when electric vehicles first came along, the government basically supported the adoption of them with a grant of $7,500. So Tesla had that and everybody else. But now if you sold a certain number of vehicles, I think it's 250,000 off the top of my head, then you no longer qualify for that grant. So Tesla doesn't get it. GM doesn't get it. But Ford, because they're latecomers to the market, which I think is kind of stupid, really, that you're penalizing the people who did the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Ford coming late to the market will qualify for this grant.
Yeah.
So you get $7,500 off. Now, there's two ways to do this. If you buy the vehicle, you then have to claim it through your personal tax return. And that obviously assumes you owe $7,500 worth of tax. But if you're buying a car with $45,000 plus, you probably do.
So basically what you're saying is that if you qualify for the full $7,500 tax benefit, you have to claim that as like income on your, you know. So if you make $60,000, you got to say you make 67.
No, you say if you make $60,000 and you owe $20,000 in tax, then you will offset $7,500 against your tax bill. So you'll save, but you only do that when you file your tax return. So let's say you buy in January. It could be 18 months till you get your money back. If you think about it, by the time you file your tax
return,
you qualify
for the full $7,500.
If you've qualified. Now, most people at this price point should, because they're likely to be paying more than $7,500 in tax. If you lease a vehicle, and I did this with my BMW, if you lease it, you can actually bake, most of the time, you will bake the value of that federal tax credit into the lease value. So basically reduce the monthly payments. And you do that because on a lease, the manufacturer retains ownership of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So they claim the $7,500. So with my BMW, for example, you look at the original, my i3, you look at the original price, and then by the time they factored all this in, the lease is like $450 a month, which, you know, still a lot of money, but more achievable. The problem with the Ford is they're not doing that. So even if you do they do something called Ford options, which is kind of like a lease but not a lease, you actually own the vehicle. So your monthly payment is going to be that much higher, you know, $600, $700, $800, and then you're going to have to try and claim this back down the line. Which I think they've done it that way partly because Ford makes more money. They're not going to build so many; they're going to build 50,000 globally in the first year because they've got battery supply problems, which is a bit of a legacy of not getting into EVs fast enough. So they're basically saying, okay, we can sell all of these, we can make enough money, so let's not do a lease product. I mean, you can guarantee that if sales dipped, you know, they'd be in with a lease. But, you know, that's the big black mark against it for me right now. And it's super complicated, but
it's interesting. And it's maybe there is a certain number of Mach-Es that they need to sell before they can introduce a lease, or maybe enough people will speak out and say, we need a lease before it even becomes available. Yeah. They're taking deposits now on the base model, not the GT.
Yeah, GT's coming later. I mean, the main thing from Edmund's advice has always been two things, really. The technology is moving on super fast. So battery power and battery length and everything else in 3 years' time will be in a very different place. And also, you know, residual values on EVs are very hit and miss. Teslas are okay, but they control the market. But if you look at things like Nissan Leaf and things like that, residuals are rubbish. So you kind of hedge it by leasing.
Okay, well.
Interesting times.
Yeah, interesting. We're going to run out of time. I want to get into a couple more things, but before we do, let me tell you a little bit about our friends at Dodge. Hurry into your local Dodge dealer where they bring you performance, technology, and great deals. You don't have to wait until Black Friday to get a great deal because Dodge right now is offering Power Dollars. With Power Dollars, you get $10 off for each horsepower of your new car. That's every 2019 Dodge Charger, every 2019 Challenger. And if you buy a 2019 SRT Hellcat Red Eye, you receive an almost $8,000 cash allowance. You get more power and get more off. It's that simple. Hurry into your local Dodge dealer today for the Dodge Black Friday sales event, which is going on all month long. And take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars.
I drove a Dodge yesterday with Mr. Samuel Hubenet for a little addendum to our horsepower challenge.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The contest is still going on. You can follow Dodge on Instagram. You can follow Goldberg on Instagram as well. You guys get the rules. Goldberg95 and Goldberg's Garage on Instagram. You can get the rules on how to do that. It's a lot of Bill yelling in videos. And
people seem to like that for some reason. I don't know why. It's a far depiction of what my normal life is.
They're like, all right, everything you just shot, Bill, was great. Can you do it this time with yelling? You're like, sure. No, it's good. But before we wrap, I want to ask Alistair about the new Corvette. You know, it's been announced a few months now. I know you guys got one on order along with your Shelby GT500. You got a chance to drive the Corvette recently. What did you drive? What configuration? Tell me about it.
So we drove the pretty much the one that you would want. It had a few more luxury items, but basically in the spec that you want. So with the Magna Ride and the performance kit and everything else. And I'd say I was really impressed by it.
Yeah,
we've got a. If you go to our YouTube channel, Edmund's YouTube channel, we've got a film out about it at the moment. But it, which is doing great. But it, I drove it on the road, and then I drove it at our test track, and particularly on the track. You know, it feels like a proper mid-engined supercar.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, it's there's a lot of things going for it. You know, it's the last remaining naturally aspirated V8 that you can get in any supercar now, because the Lambos and the Audis are V10s. It is great value, and it feels like a different experience. It doesn't feel like a, you know, like the old Corvette. It always felt like a Corvette. This is giving you a genuine supercar experience at a fraction of the price. And you know, the brakes are great. The steering really surprised me how good the steering was. It's agile. I was really impressed by it.
So you drove it on a track.
Yeah.
And you drove it around town as well? Where did you get to, like, yeah. How is it, like, you know, everybody that, like, the track stuff I kind of expected to be fantastic, but most people that drive that car are just going to drive that around town, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a cool-looking car and it, you know.
And it's better than one might have expected. It's the ride quality particularly, because as you say, most people are going to cruise around cities in them. The ride quality is borderline luxurious. Again, this car had Magna Ride, which we're fans of.
Yeah.
And they're really good compromise. I mean, there's a few things like the, you know, over the shoulder visibility. It's a mid-engine car. You know, you tend to accept that. But yeah, as a thing to drive around town, as a thing to live with, and that was the big question: has it gone away from being a car that you could genuinely drive every day? I think you could.
Is the front axle lift fast? Because the front axle lift feature on a lot of cars, Porsche, McLaren, you got to start doing that a block or two away because it is slow.
Well,
only the 4 GT, that thing pops up like a lowrider.
Well, that's just hydraulics on the GT. I did the original drive of that, and I couldn't believe what was happening.
The first time I hit it, I was like, oh, it broke.
Yeah, it's like Le Mans. The Corvette thing also has this very cool feature, which is it's GPS-based. So if you're driving... It basically learns. So if you're driving home and you know there's a few speed bumps, or you know you've got to go up into your driveway or something like that, the car will actually learn and automatically raise the nose. Do not order a Corvette without one. That would be my advice. It would be madness.
Yeah, you need it.
Yeah,
you're going to just smash the front of that thing on everything. Yeah.
But as we've talked about before on the show, you know it starts at 60K and that's the headline figure. But to get the one that you want is just over 70. So it's not like they're really playing, you know, really pulling a fast one. It's not 90 grand.
A friend of mine said he configured it with the options he liked, and he was at 85 with it. But which is good. By the way, still sub 100. Like it's not 94,000 sub. It's significantly sub 100.
There's a few. I mean, there's still a few. The seats weren't great. They're supposed to be super, super aggressive sports seats, which just weren't. And the interior is better in real life. In pictures, you get this very, all where the air conditioning controls go.
Yeah, the line of switches.
Yeah, and in pictures, it looks really weird and imposing, but actually in real life, it's a lot easier to live with.
That's interesting to hear. It's a good example of how using it is going to make the difference. Like getting in it and actually messing with it is the game changer when as far as just seeing it in photos. And we do see a lot of that. We see a lot of things in photos going, I don't know about this. I don't know about that. And but when you get in and start playing with it and you're like, oh, this does actually feel right. Now I see why they did this. When by the time you get into a certain seating position, your arms and your legs are at a certain angle, you want things within control that, you know, within reach that, that makes sense. So,
but square steering wheel is still stupid. Stupid in an Aston Martin, stupid in a Corvette.
I also noticed that, I don't know, did you do a drive with the Audi RS6 wagon?
No, personally, I haven't been in that yet. I did drive the Taycan last week, I'm slightly embargoed under that in that I can't, but it's a 4S. So yeah. We're all signed some big legal document that we can't talk about until December, but I can tell you it's very good.
Yeah, everybody's really telling good. Me that. Everybody's driving. That's the Porsche, the all-electric Porsche.
Yeah.
Is everyone saying it's fantastic.
It's got this cool sound mode as well. There, but
So does the Mach-E. Mach-E.
I was driving back into LA. We took it at Angeles Crest, the Taycan. And I was with the cameraman, and we said, actually, you know what? I'd rather have one of these than a 911. They're basically priced identically to the new 911. Starts at just over 100 plus all the options.
Is a 911 100,000?
911, even a Carrera is now 100K. A Carrera S. The Carrera S we had on test, which had options on it, but the options were like stuff that you'd like rear steering, stuff that you'd actually want. It was like 140 grand.
Jeez. They used to be turbo price.
Oh, everything's just got so expensive.
Uh-oh, you just activated your...
I activated Siri.
Yeah, activated Siri somehow. Somebody's super bitching about Porsche prices. I don't know what she's talking about.
She's saying surely not.
All right, well, we're going to have to get into more LA Auto Show stuff at another time, but we've got lots of photos coming up. I think the best thing to do is go to edmunds.com/roadnoise. You guys got a video about the Mach-E.
The Mach-E or whichever one you wish. And the Corvette.
And the Corvette and the Porsche.
You're right. The Porsche is coming up in middle of December. We've also, December the 11th, launching our Top Rated. I'll come in and talk about that. That's our big awards thing of the year. So it's a really busy time. And we did something crazy, like 60 pieces of content around the LA Auto Show. So it's all there. edmunds.com/roadnoise.
There you go. All right, guys, we're going to wrap things up. Of course, you can find us at carcastshow.com. And we're on iTunes as you guys are listening, but we appreciate a nice little review. You can follow me at Motorator. I've been posting lots of photos from SEMA and LA Auto Show and all kinds of other stuff that are going on. And, You can get Goldberg. He's Goldberg and Goldberg Garage on Twitter, Goldberg95 and Goldberg's Garage on Instagram, and Alistair Weaver on Twitter and Weavometer on Instagram. I wasn't making fun of that one this time. You were laughing on your own.
It goes back to what I was saying about Elon Musk. If I just call myself Alistair Weaver, nobody follow me. Now I'm Weavometer.
Weavometer. People are going to, I'm interested in that. I want to follow that. Like we said, we're on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. And, of course, we've got some great documentaries out there as well. The 24-Hour War and the Shelby documentary are both on Netflix. I just watched them. They're great. I think you guys will enjoy them as well. And if you want to give them as a gift, go to chassis.com, C-H-A-S-S-Y. You can order the DVDs. You can order the Blu-rays. I'll give you a little heads up and tell you that the Shelby Blu-ray has some extra footage. And when they did sort of the upscaling of like the 16mm footage on Blu-ray, it looks fantastic. So buy the Blu-ray. That's pretty much all we got for this time. So thanks, guys. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.